Greetings and welcome to another episode. Let's jump right in with turbines.
Extreme weather fueled by climate change is pushing them beyond their design limits, threatening the future of renewable energy at sea, revealing a paradox in our fight against climate change. Offshore wind farms, once hailed as a clean energy solution, are now being battered by the very forces they were meant to help mitigate. Hurricanes like Melissa, with record-breaking wind speeds driven by rising ocean temperatures, are overwhelming turbine infrastructure. These machines were engineered to handle strong winds, but not the unprecedented extremes we're now seeing. You need to know this because it challenges the assumption that scaling up renewables is a simple fix. Offshore wind has been a cornerstone of global decarbonization strategies. Just 1% of coastal waters could theoretically power a third of the world's electricity. But if turbines can't survive the intensifying climate, then the entire model needs rethinking. This affects energy planners, coastal communities, and anyone relying on a future powered by clean electricity. This insight helps you and those around you by highlighting the urgency of climate adaptation, not just mitigation. It's not enough to build green infrastructure. It must be resilient. If you're in policy, engineering, or environmental advocacy, this is a wake-up call. We need smarter designs, better forecasting, and flexible systems that can withstand the new normal climate volatility. Societally, this could shift how we invest in energy. Instead of pouring billions into vulnerable offshore installations, we might prioritize onshore renewables, microgrids, or hybrid systems that combine solar, wind, and storage. It could also accelerate innovation in turbine materials, floating platforms, and AI-driven maintenance. The challenge isn't just technical, it's philosophical. Are we building for yesterday's climate or tomorrow's chaos? You should also know that this isn't just a future problem. Major players like Ørsted and BP have already canceled offshore projects due to rising costs and risk exposure. Siemens Energy is anticipating billions in losses. That's not theoretical, that's happening now. And it means the renewable energy transition is more fragile than we thought. So if you care about climate, energy, or the future of infrastructure, this matters. Offshore wind isn't dead, but it's at a breaking point. And what we do next will determine whether it bends or shatters.
Alrighty, up next we have living a computers. And we're not talking about ourselves.
Scientists at Ohio State University have done something that sounds like science fiction, but is very real. They've turned ordinary shiitake mushrooms into living computers. That's right. Your next computer might not be made of silicon, but of fungi. This breakthrough involves using the mushroom's mycelium, the root-like network beneath the surface, as a biological circuit capable of storing and processing information. These fungal circuits, called memristors, can remember past electrical states, just like the memory chips in your phone or laptop. But unlike traditional chips, they're biodegradable, low energy, and grown rather than manufactured. Why should you care? Because this could radically change how we think about technology. Right now, the tech industry is facing a crisis. We're running out of rare earth metals, energy costs are skyrocketing, and e-waste is piling up in landfills. But mushrooms? They grow on waste, require minimal energy, and decompose naturally. If we can build computers from mushrooms, we're not just solving a tech problem. We're addressing an environmental one, too. You could one day compost your old hardware instead of tossing it into a landfill. This matters to you and the people around you because it opens the door to sustainable, accessible computing. Imagine rural schools or underserved communities growing their own computing infrastructure. Think about wearable tech that's not just smart, but alive, devices that adapt, heal, and biodegrade. This isn't just a new kind of chip, it's a new way of thinking about what technology is and who gets to use it. On a societal level, this could shift the balance of power in tech. Right now, chip manufacturing is centralized, expensive, and geopolitically fraught. But if you can grow computing components in a lab or even in your garage, that decentralizes innovation. It democratizes access. It also brings us closer to neuromorphic computing, where machines don't just compute, they think more like brains. That's a leap toward artificial intelligence that's not just powerful, but energy efficient and biologically inspired. There's still a long way to go. These mushroom-based memristors are in early stages. They're not ready to replace your laptop just yet, but the proof of concept is there. And it's not just about mushrooms. It's about reimagining the materials we use to build the digital world. It's about asking, what if our technology didn't fight nature, but grew from it? So next time you see a shiitake mushroom, don't just think stir fry. Think servers. Think sustainability. Think the future. Because it might just be growing in the soil beneath your feet.
Very interesting. Well, how about this magical communication?
An octopus communicating with a scientist isn't just magical. It's a glimpse into a world of intelligence we've barely begun to understand. This moment challenges everything you think you know about consciousness, communication, and the boundaries between species. A marine biologist, Dr. Alex Schnell, interacts with an octopus named Scarlet in the Great Barrier Reef. What unfolds is more than a simple encounter. It's a mutual exchange. The octopus doesn't just react. It initiates, responds, and engages in a way that feels eerily familiar. This isn't a trained dolphin or a parrot mimicking speech. It's a wild creature choosing to connect, and that's extraordinary. You should know this because it reframes how you view intelligence. Octopuses have three hearts, blue blood, and no bones. Their brains are distributed throughout their arms, and they can change color and texture instantly. They're alien in every sense, yet they show curiosity, problem solving, and now, perhaps, communication. If a creature this different can reach across the biological divide, what does that say about the limits of empathy and understanding? This helps you and those around you by expanding the way you think about animals, nature, and even technology. If octopuses can communicate, what other species might be trying to do the same? What signals have we missed because we weren't listening? This could influence how we treat marine life, how we design underwater exploration tools, and how we educate future scientists. It's a call to observe more deeply and assume less. On a societal level, this could shift how we define intelligence and consciousness. For centuries, humans have placed themselves at the top of a cognitive hierarchy. But moments like this suggest that intelligence is not linear. It's diverse, contextual, and sometimes hidden in plain sight. Recognizing that could reshape ethics in science, conservation, and even artificial intelligence. If we accept that octopuses have minds worth engaging, we might also reconsider how we interact with other non-human minds, whether animal or machine. You should also know that this isn't an isolated event. Researchers have documented octopuses using tools, solving puzzles, and escaping enclosures. But this clip adds something new, emotional resonance. It's not just about what the octopus did. It's about how it made us feel. That emotional bridge is rare in science, and it's powerful. It invites you to see nature not as a resource, but as a relationship. So next time you think about intelligence, don't just look up, look down into the ocean, into the eyes of a creature with no bones and eight arms, because it might be looking back, trying to tell you something. And that changes everything.
All right. Now, signatures, how they have changed.
Cylinder seals in ancient Mesopotamia weren't just tools. They were identity, authority, and artistry rolled into one. Understanding them reveals how much we've lost in the meaning of a signature today. In Mesopotamia, over 5,000 years ago, to sign documents, mark ownership, and express personal identity. These seals weren't just functional. They were deeply symbolic. Each one was unique, often made from precious stones like lapis lazuli or chalcedony, and engraved with intricate scenes that reflected the owner's status, beliefs, or profession. When rolled over wet clay, they left a distinctive impression that served as a signature, a mark of authenticity, and a declaration of presence. You should know this because it reframes how we think about signatures today. In the modern world, a signature is often a scribble at the bottom of a contract or a digital squiggle on a screen. It's transactional, impersonal, and easily forged. But in Mesopotamia, A signature was a sacred extension of the self. It carried weight, meaning, and permanence. It was a fusion of identity and artistry. Recognizing this contrast helps you appreciate how far we've drifted from the personal and symbolic roots of authentication. This insight can help you and people you know rethink how identity is represented in a digital age. As we move toward biometric scans, blockchain verification, and AI-generated avatars, we risk losing the human touch in how we prove who we are. Cylinder seals remind us that identity can be beautiful, intentional, and deeply personal. They challenge us to ask, what does it mean to leave your mark? And how can we make that mark more meaningful? On a societal level, this knowledge can shift how we design systems of trust. Imagine if digital signatures were more than just encrypted codes. What if they reflected your values, your story, your culture? What if authentication wasn't just secure, but expressive? Cylinder seals offer a model for blending security with symbolism, utility with humanity. They show that even bureaucratic tools can be art, and that art can be a form of governance. You should also know that thousands of these seals survive today, housed in museums around the world. They're not just relics, they're records of lives lived, deals made, and identities declared. They span centuries and empires, from Sumer to Akkad to Babylon, and they speak to a continuity of human need, to be seen, to be known, to be remembered. So next time you sign your name on a check, a lease, or a digital form, think about what it means. Think about the Mesopotamians who carved their stories into stone and rolled them into history. And ask yourself, what does your signature say about you? Because it could say a lot more.
As always, thank you all so much for listening and spending some time with me. And until next time, when we meet at the crossroads, peace.